have the book Paul Goebel Storyteller in front of me, and I want to ask about the title, because you could have called him an artist, an illustrator. Why storyteller?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think that through his writing and his artwork, Paul Goebel was certainly a storyteller, and so I think that it would have been inadequate just to refer to his art as art. He certainly used his illustrations to convey details in the stories that he told alongside his writing as well.
Let's talk about his early days, because most of us here in South Dakota know him through his books, especially the 1979 Caldecott winner. Tell me about where he grew up, because he's not only is he not Native American, he's not born in the United States.
Yeah, that's right, and that's part of the fascinating, or one of the many fascinating aspects about Paul's life is most people would assume that he is an American, but although he did take out American citizenship, he was born and grew up in England, and it was just through primarily his mother reading him stories that he developed this fascination with Native Americans, and most specifically with Native Americans of the Great Plains. And interestingly, or at least interestingly for me, some of those stories that he heard through his mother were written by Ernest Thompson Seton and Grey Owl, who were themselves two Englishmen who were transplanted eventually to North America, just as Paul eventually was. And the same with me. You may be able to tell from my accent that I'm not a Canadian. In fact, I'm from Australia. But just like Paul, I found myself in North America, and I mentioned Grey Owl and Ernest Thompson Seton, and they both lived in Manitoba as well and wrote from Manitoba. And so some of those books that were so influential to Paul when he was a child were actually written here in Manitoba. So it's just one of the many, what some people would consider to be coincidences about this whole project. And in fact, I've discovered that there were so many coincidences that I long ago stopped considering them as such. Paul's wife, Janet, used to say to me that it was just meant to be, and that seems certainly to be true.
Let's talk a little bit about the access that you were given from the family and others to really dig into studying his life and his work.
Yeah, well, in fact, right from the start, the Goebels were most helpful and most accommodating, and they provided me with all sorts of access to things that others typically wouldn't be able to access. I mean, obviously, there are things in museums and libraries that are available for the public to get a hold of, but the Goebels provided me with access to, I mean, even things just like family photo albums. They provided me with access to Paul's journals and notebooks and things like that, where he oftentimes was working out his ideas for stories and his artwork. And so to have that sort of access was particularly revealing, and it was particularly special because Paul has long been reluctant to share those sorts of things with other people. In fact, he considered it almost the same as standing before an audience in his underwear, or even worse still, stark naked, to show people how he eventually came to his end products. And so it was, I think, the product of a relationship that we formed and a trust and respect for one another that was built up, that eventually allowed Paul to open up and share some of those things that he previously would have been reluctant to share. And I think most fortunately with this book, Paul also then agreed to my request to include some of those things within the book. And so I think that readers will find it particularly interesting and informative to see some of Paul's sketches and notes, and just to see some of the ways that he went about creating the stories and the artwork that he did.
So you, as his biographer then, knowing that that was sort of his anxiety is probably not the right word, but he had hesitations and reservations about revealing that aspect of his process, you must have had to approach the material and the man with a certain amount of caution or patience or reverence. How did you figure out how to get to that next layer?
Yeah, well, I guess it just evolved over time as this relationship strengthened. I mean, this is a book that I worked on in earnest for 4 years, so it hasn't been something that was just cranked out overnight. It took that time for Paul to become comfortable, and certainly initially there were some hesitations, even just about the whole project. But, you know, as a respectful and, in fact, a rather affectionate relationship developed, Paul could see that that these things were important and that they would be of interest. I should say that throughout the time working with Paul, the thing that I heard him say more often than anything else was, "Greg, nobody will be interested in any of this." I mean, that's the type of man he was. He was very, very humble, very shy. And of course, I should say that presented some levels of difficulty for a biographer to get this man to talk about himself and to talk about his accomplishments. But that was also very much a part of Paul Goebel's charm as well, that humility.
And you knew otherwise. You knew people would be interested in it because you were interested in him. What fascinated you about his work or his personality that made you want to take on this rather complex project?
Yeah, well, you're right. I mean, and that was the case. So whenever Paul said to me, "Greg, nobody will be interested in this," I would always say to him, "Well, I know that you're wrong, because I know that at least one person is, and that was me. But I also suspected that many would be, and that has proved to be the case." But yeah, I'm a children's literature professor, so I'm a professor here at the University of Manitoba in the Faculty of Education. And so it was because of my interest in children's literature that I had this particular interest in Paul Goebel, because long ago, long before I'd met Paul, I had identified him as my favourite illustrator. It was just something about his content, but also his very unique style that I found especially attractive and appealing. And so I had this interest from a professional level. And so when I first began the project, I respected Paul as an artist, as a children's literature creator. But as I got to know him and developed this relationship with him and with his family, I came to respect Paul as a person.
Hmm. Did he consider himself a children's literature creator? What was his relationship with that sort of you're a children's author designation?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, because, no, Paul didn't. In fact, Paul always said that he stumbled into the field of children's literature, but he referred to himself as a square peg in a round hole, because he felt that he was expressing his love for Native Americans and love for art, and it was just because his work was being produced in a picture book format that he had this designation as a children's literature creator. But that wasn't necessarily the way that he saw himself. As I say, he saw himself as an artist, as an author, and as a lover of Native American people of the Great Plains and the various cultures and the various histories of those various peoples. And so he wanted to explore and find out more and then express his love of those things that he had found out. And as I say, it was somewhat by chance that he ended up with this designation as a creator of children's literature. Now, and that story in itself is a rather interesting one. He was working as a teacher at college in England when he came home one day and saw his son watching a television program that portrayed the events of Custer's Last Stand and the Battle of the Little Bighorn. And Paul thought that it was terribly inaccurate and indeed disrespectful to the Native American participants. And so he wanted to help his son develop a fuller and more accurate understanding of the events. And so he went searching in libraries and bookstores for a book that would be accurate but would also be suitable for children. And finding none, it was that experience that inspired Paul to think, well, perhaps I need to create one. Mm-hmm. And that was the creation, or led to the creation, of the first of these 40-plus books that he subsequently created over his career.
So where does that sort of level of cultural thinking and critical thinking come from because someone who doesn't live here and doesn't have direct relationship with tribal people, how did he get past the stereotypes that he would see on TV and know that there was a deeper story there?
Yeah, well, actually, it was just a result of lifelong study. As a child growing up in England, I think that perhaps above anything, he just liked this idea of the outdoors. And so he conceded that his childhood view of Native American people, say specifically the Lakota or Cheyenne or Blackfoot or whoever it was that he came to eventually write about, he concedes that his initial childhood view was in fact a rather childish and rather ignorant view. But because of this passion that he had, he explored more and more, and he did more and more study and more research, and eventually, of course, made several trips to the United States and spent time on the reservations in South Dakota and Montana and got to know some of these people. And it was then that he developed this more sophisticated and more accurate understandings about the people that he would eventually come to write about. But so it was something I think that was just a childish interest that developed into this lifetime love. Paul and his family actually had some really interesting connections back in England as well. And so one particular gentleman, Marco Pallas, arranged for Joseph Epps Brown to come and stay with the Goebbels just because he knew of Paul's interest in all things Native American. And Joseph Epps Brown had just spent the previous year living with Black Elk and writing the story, or writing the book, The Sacred Pipe. And so these sorts of experiences are experiences that, again, probably just seem that they were destined to be. He had these experiences that most people don't have, and it was those sorts of things that helped him to solidify his understandings and, I think, inspire this continued and ever-growing passion.
If you're just joining us, our guest is Greg Bryan. The book is Paul Goebel, Storyteller. It's a beautiful biography filled with artwork and photos, and in-depth information about Paul Goebel, the artist, the storyteller, children's author. Greg, where does he stand in sort of the bigger picture of children's literature? What's his place amongst, the Maurice Sendaks and the Rosemary Wells and the other great author illustrators?
Well, I would say that he stands right alongside them, and in some respects, some of the big names in children's literature, I would say, in fact, that he stands in front of them. And that was something that Paul himself didn't understand. Again, I think that was a part of this incredible humility of which I spoke earlier. Paul really didn't fully understand the significance of his many and varied accomplishments. And you made reference earlier to the Caldecott Medal. So, I mean, as a Caldecott medalist, he certainly is one of the leaders in the world of children's literature. The Caldecott Medal is awarded annually in the United States for the best picture book of the year. And so as the creator of that book, The Girl Who Loved Wild Horses, he certainly could have rested on his laurels on the achievements associated with that book alone. But he that was really very early in his career, and he went on to create many, many more books, and in fact many better books. Paul himself used to say that people considered that one was probably his best simply because it won that award. But I think he was quite right in saying that as his career developed, he got better and better at what he was doing. And so I do agree with him that although that's a wonderful book, many other wonderful books followed it, and perhaps even some superior books followed it.
And The Girl Who Loved Wild Horses wins the Caldecott Medal in 1979. Why is that significant as far as a date? Was the time right for that book artistically and content-wise?
Yeah, that's right. And that's what Paul recognized himself. You know, there are pendulum swings to do with people's interests and politics and things like that. And so I do think that the time was very right then for these various award committees to be looking to recognize some Native American content. And perhaps had the book been produced earlier, it may have been ignored. And perhaps if it was produced today by somebody who is not a Native American, then perhaps it might be ignored. But the time was right, and I think that many people, many Native American people, have benefited greatly from Paul's career, and I think have benefited greatly from the opening of doors of opportunity that were created by some of this pioneering work of Paul Goebel. Publishers began to see that, yes, there was interest in Native American stories, and yes, publishing Native American stories in picture book format could sell and could make money for publishers. And so I think that many of the wonderfully talented Native American creators today actually owe something of a debt of gratitude to Paul Goebel because of those opportunities that he created for them. One in particular that I think of is S.D. Nelson, mm-hmm. who is a fabulously talented Lakota author and illustrator and has created many wonderful picture books with Lakota stories and Lakota themes. And he recognizes himself, and he has no doubt that some of the opportunities he enjoys are a product of that work that Paul Goebel invested back in his first book was published in 1969, so in the 60s and 70s. That sort of pioneering work has created these opportunities for these wonderfully talented Native American creators today.
Tell me about his artistic process then, late 60s, early 70s. It's a complex thing that he's doing to create sort of the boldness in color and what he ends up getting onto the page. Can you describe that process to me and the complexities of it?
Yeah, well, actually, it's interesting that you use the word complex, and certainly there's incredible complexity in Paul's work, but it was actually inspired by a seeming simplicity in ledger book art. And so Paul was endowed with the confidence to be able to try it in having seen and learned about ledger book art. And at first glance, there is, you know, a almost childlike simplicity. Paul subsequently realized that there's much more complexity there than might appear to be the case. But it was those bold splashes of color and the, I think, general absence of facial details that gave Paul this confidence to try it himself. Previous to that, he had done very few depictions of people, and he says it was simply because he didn't know how to do it. So even though as a child he used to draw and paint birds and animals, he shied away from drawing people. But seeing ledger book art, he thought, well, perhaps I can do that. And that's the style that he adopted and subsequently adapted as his career progressed. But so you mentioned color, and that was certainly one of the characteristics of ledger book art, is really bright colors and, lots of detail in clothing more so than in individuals' faces. So that was his starting point. And then as his career progressed, he evolved as he got better and better at the work that he was doing. One of the evolutions that was really important in Paul's work was the addition of details of settings. So, for instance, plants and landscapes and birds and animals and insects, because traditionally ledger book art was most often devoid of those sorts of details. Any animals that were included were most often limited to the horses that, say, the Lakota people were riding, or that the Cheyenne were riding. But there were very few of these additional details included in ledger book art. But in Paul's third book, he began to experiment with the addition of some of these extra details. And then at the height of Paul's career, it was a real Paul Goebel trademark, was these really lavish landscapes and the tessellated rock patterns and maybe some lizards or snakes hidden in those rocks, and then very colourful but accurately drawn birds and animals. Now, Paul always said that his birds were not photographic, but were graphic, and by that he meant that he wanted them not necessarily to be an exact duplicate of the beauty of nature, but he wanted them to be recognizable. He wanted those people who knew about birds to be able to recognize the different birds that he included in his paintings. And it was important to him, and that was just one of the ways that he wanted to be accurate. And so his desire to be accurate was a driving force within his career. He wanted to be accurate in portraying the creatures of the Great Plains, but of course also the peoples of the Great Plains. And so he did this meticulous research to ensure the accuracy and authenticity of the, the cultural artifacts that he might portray, or the clothing, or the teepee designs or lodge designs that he portrayed.
And how about the stories themselves? Because in many of his books, he's not translating, but he's interpreting something that would be passed down orally, and he's doing that in language and in art, and then he's doing that in the confines of a 32-page picture book structure. It's really quite marvelous when you think about even attempting that. How did he sort of take on the oral history and make that translation into something that librarians could read at story time?
Yeah, no, that's right. That's another great question too, Laurie, and I appreciate you asking that, because that, you know, that's obviously a challenge, because you are working within the confines that are presented within a picture book format, and trying to replicate an oral history within a written story is going to present some difficulties. And Paul was aware of that. And as much as he possibly could, his desire was always to replicate not just the content of the stories, but also the style of the oral storytelling. Now, whether or not that's even achievable is debatable, but as much as possible, that's what he had in mind, that he was trying to in a picture book format, replicate an oral storytelling event. Paul was, as I said, meticulous in his research, and so with the stories that he retold, and I should stress that Paul never claimed these stories as his own, he always recognized that he was a retailer, and so with these stories that he retold, he would look to try to find the earliest recorded versions that he could. And some of these written records were well over 100 years old, and he might find them in some obscure museum publications on some dusty bookshelf or something like that. So he would try to find the earliest recorded records, I should say, and read those, and then he would look for more recent retellings of the same story, and then he would also ask his Native American friends, because he did, over a long time, he had developed many very strong friendships with Lakota people, or with Crow people in particular, Lakota and Crow, and so he would ask these elders, these old storytellers, to tell him the story as well, so that he could hear their style of telling. Now, in some cases, the memory of the story had actually been lost over time, but where they did recall and did know the story, he would also bear that in mind and use that as information in his own retelling.
What did you learn about, you already admired him when you started working on this, what did you learn about him personally through meeting him and looking in his journals, reading his book with fresh eyes, looking at his work with fresh eyes? What did you learn that you didn't already know about Paul Goebel?
Well, I think, the trait that I will always most associate with Paul was his incredible humility. And I think that's true. Most people that I've asked about what they think of Paul Goebel, if they happen to know him well, I think that most people do immediately identify that as his most prevalent trait, this incredible humility. And that's something that I respect a great deal, and it's something that, as I said earlier, I find quite charming. But also, this incredible desire to be accurate. I think that people can look at his artwork and appreciate the beauty of it, but then to find out more about just how accurate his portrayals are that was also something that strengthened my appreciation of his work. Without knowing those things, it doesn't necessarily detract from the art, but knowing that they are there and knowing that they are accurate, I think certainly adds to the art. And so I think that that was something that I found certainly very informative and something that, again, just further strengthened my appreciation of Paul. Now, that wasn't necessarily always the case, because early in his career, he was still finding his way. But that's something that he very quickly, very early in his career, did actually determine that he needed to be accurate, that he needed to be authentic in his portrayals. And he always said that it was actually disrespectful to just sort of portray, say, generic Native Americans. You know, he wanted, if it was a Lakota story, he wanted to ensure that his depictions were accurate in depicting Lakota people and Lakota ways. If it was a Crow story or a Blackfoot story or a Cheyenne story, again, he also wanted to be accurate because it was a part of his love of these people and his desire to be respectful because he loved not just the people, but he loved the stories, and he wanted to make sure that he got things right.
And you love children's literature. And so I'm wondering what, knowing what you know, and talk for a minute to those up-and-coming children's authors and illustrators. What does Kid Lit need now to really push it forward to its next level? What kind of authors and illustrators need to be working today?
Well, I mean, I think that the world of children's literature is at a really interesting phase because all sorts of interesting and unique creations are appearing on bookshelves. And so it's difficult to say what we need because it's something that we might perhaps best recognize in the future. Well, actually, just as we needed Paul Goebel back then, perhaps 10 or 15 or 20 years from now, we might say, well, gee, we really needed so-and-so doing this and that in 2017. And I think it's perhaps those people with the foresight, those creators with the foresight to be able to create something new and startling that we will celebrate and look back on because of their incredible achievements. I do think that, generally speaking, we need continued access to diverse voices. I think that the world is a better place as we learn different people's stories. I think that children's literature certainly should serve as both a window and a mirror. So a window that we can look out of and see other people's experiences, and a mirror that we can look into and see our own experiences reflected. And I think that that's a good thing for a child to be able to learn about the experiences of others by looking out the window, but then also to see themselves valued as they look in this mirror and see their lived experiences being represented as well. So I think that more and more diversity in children's literature can only be a good thing, and I think that that's perhaps the avenue now that I think we should be continuing to push. And as I mentioned earlier, there are increasing numbers of Native American authors and illustrators who are being published, and I think that diversity in all forms should be welcomed and should be embraced in the world of children's literature.
Let's close with a story about Paul and animals or nature. Can you think of an anecdote that sort of illustrates his relationship with the natural world?
Well, Paul said that he wanted to include the birds and animals and other creatures in his illustrations because he considered to paint them was prayer. Paul very much saw the out of doors as his church rather than, say, within the confines of four walls in a church building. And so, as I say, to paint them was prayer. He said that he loved those birds and animals, and he felt that if he got it right, that others might see and begin to love these birds and animals as well. And I think that that was always very important to Paul, that people loved and appreciated the beauty of creation. And so I think that that's another thing that people will always associate with Paul Goebel, not just Native American content, but also a very obvious love of nature. Mm. One of the things that I am really, really pleased about is that, well, I should say that the publisher had said to me that they usually received one or two copies of a book back from the printer in advance of the main shipment. And so knowing that Paul's time was short, I asked them to send the very first copy straight to Paul's house as soon as it arrived. Mm. And I'm really happy to report that it arrived on the Friday before he passed away on the following Thursday. And so his son tells me that the last and largest smile to cross his father's face was when that book arrived and he sat down to have a look through it. So I'm really happy because I haven't even seen the book myself. It hasn't reached me yet. So I know that if it had been sent to me and then on to Paul, it never would have made it in time. So I'm just really delighted that he got to see it. And although he won't be able to attend book launches and events like that, it's just a wonderful thing to know that he saw the book and was very happy with it.
Did you have an awareness as you were putting the finishing touches on it that time was short for him?
Yes, I did. His wife, his beloved wife Janet, passed away 2.5 years ago, and they were always so incredibly connected that, in fact, I'm rather surprised that Paul lasted as long without Janet as he did. And so that one of Paul's books is The Great Race, mm-hmm. about the race around the Black Hills, and that was something of an attitude that I developed in my own mind, was that this was a great race that I was undertaking to try to get this done and to try to get it done before Paul passed away, not just so that he could see it, but also so that I could continue to have his information and his assistance with the project, because just as Paul was always desirous to be accurate, I was desirous to get this right, and I was desirous to make sure that this was accurate as well.